and ever and ever and ever you'll be back like before. I will fight the fight and win the war for your love and for your praise. And I'll love you till my dying days. When you're gone, I'll go mad. So don't throw away the sting we heard. Cause when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Gabby and Keeps. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sunny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? Sunny.
I'm good.
How are you?
You had mentioned when I got on the line that my hair... looked like I had a haircut, but it's.
I see your forehead now, so I.
No, it's just actually so long that I can push it all the way back, Gordon Gekko style. I can just like slick it back, you know, and it's
for lack of a better word.
You know, it's, you know, once you stop going to the barber, that's the first step. Then you just stop showering, you know, so the hair retains its natural grease and it's easier to move back and forth.
And eventually,
you just, you know, stop getting out of bed and start drinking your Relax Riesling at 9 in the morning.
I was going to say, what's going on here? You have, well,
relax,
I know there's a time difference.
Riesling.
Is it the morning over there?
I honestly am like, I'm just hot because it's been hot for, you know, like 10 straight weeks.
It is hard to drink outside. I will tell you that.
Yeah,
much.
It's hot, I just wanted something cool and refreshing. And this Riesling is like Kool-Aid. I mean, it really is just sweet and crisp. It's delicious.
Crisp? No, it's very. My introduction to wine was when I was
12
in Germany for a summer, and I lived. I was 8. No. I was in college, but I lived with a guest host family on a mountaintop in the Mosel. So they lived, you know, I mean, they're right there in the middle of all the
near the ice wine.
And so I didn't start. Mm. Oh yeah, the ice wine is very good. But that was my exposure. It wasn't to French whites. It wasn't to Burgundies. It was to Rieslings and the different levels of Spätzle.
Yeah, I'm a total sucker for a good, not even a good, actually, just a cheap Riesling, like an $8 to $10 bottle of Riesling. I can drink 100 of those.
Yeah. That you could find now. The big thing now that's very trendy is Austrian whites, Grüner Veltliners. It's like, oh, I got to get a Grüner Veltliner. The funny thing is, when I was in Vienna, yeah, that was just like regular wine, you know? And it was like, and then all of a sudden it becomes the thing.
Yeah.
And then the price.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the other one?
I think it's German. The Gewürztraminer. That's another solid.
Yeah, that could be French. It's from the Gamine. A little too has a weird spice thing. I'm not a fan of that. But I like Rieslings, and the Austrians. Okay, what's happening down in Texas?
Nothing.
Anything? Anything going on, Sonny?
Hey, Sonny, can you turn your gain down?
Am
just
I real
a tiny
hot?
Bit?
Am I,
you're real hot.
Sorry, hold on.
Yeah.
Is this hotter
like
or is it colder?
A little hot punch.
Hotter. Okay, hold on. How's
That's hotter.
Is that better? Sorry. Yeah, it's been two weeks since I've done a podcast.
Go.
The dials have been moved. You know, children have grabbed and turned knobs. Nothing is happening in Texas. Nothing is. I'm just sitting here drinking my Riesling, waiting for death. So.
Jamie, you had something to say? You had something to add to Sonny's?
No,
okay.
I have nothing to add to that.
No one's going to top that. How are you, JVL?
Good. It was, you know, I've been doing some more episodes of my my solo podcast. Taped a show with April Panuru.
Oh.
Taped a show with Megan McArdle.
Wow.
Had a lot of fun, and I'm not going to tell anybody here how to get it. I realized that the secret joy. I mean, secret. The the best joy I get from having my little secret podcast. Imagine if I told you that you could write a piece, but that only people you liked could read it. Like, you know, you could publish a piece, but no, you could publish a piece, but the people who you didn't like wouldn't be allowed to see it. Basically, but in podcast form, and it's great. It's deeply satisfying being able to hide it from the rest of the world.
It's like having a speakeasy. It's like having a speakeasy that only you know about and know the password to.
That's right. So right now, my brother-in-law just texted me. The Tennis Channel is replaying the Sampras-Federer match from Wimbledon in 2001.
Whoa.
And I want to just drop some quick memory lane knowledge on you guys about this.
2001 with Federer?
2001. It is the only meeting ever, lifetime, between them.
Between the two, yeah.
It's the fourth round of Wimbledon. Going into it, Federer is 19 years old. Sampras has won four straight Wimbledons and is working on his fifth straight. And Federer drops him. Drops him in a four-hour match. He then loses the next match to Tim Henman.
Oh, and how many was it? A five setter with Federer Sampras, or
it was four sets, mm-hmm. four sets, mm-hmm. and the ultimate winner. This was the year that Goran Ivanišević won his only major, where he beat Pat Rafter at his peak, and Ivanišević became the only wild card player to ever win a men's major.
That's 2001 Wimbledon. Sampras played Federer at Wimbledon, or ever.
I believe ever. I believe it's their only meeting. Maybe they're only meeting in a major. Maybe that's what it is.
You know who Goran Ivanišević's worst enemy was, don't you?
The head.
Yeah.
Right? Like that?
Yes. Thank you, JBL. You like that? Goran Ivanišević's worst enemy was Goran Ivanišević. And he had a real head. He kept on talking about himself in that his head in the third person. It was really fascinating.
But when he finally broke through and won, because he was a phenom, so Goran Ivanišević was one of these 19-year-old wunderkinds who was supposed to...
And because he was from where, like Serbia or somewhere?
Croatia.
Croatia.
He was one of the first first of those Croatian players, and he had like 142-mile-an-hour serve.
Yeah, it was insane.
But he could never get it together, and I thought it was poetic and wonderful that his big career highlight was towards the end of his career when everybody had counted him out. Because that makes his career a success story versus had he won a major at 19 and then never done the same thing again. That's a tragedy.
Yeah.
So a happy ending all around at the 2001 Wimbledon.
That's right. 2001 Wimbledon.
Yeah. Wonderful. How are you, Victorino?
I'm doing fine. I'm hanging in there yet again. They shut the water off from 8 to 5 today, but fine because
they shut
nobody's
water off
home.
In your whole neighborhood. Why are they shutting?
Yes, they shut the water. This is the third time, but only
the first
time
they
actually told us ahead of time that they're
in Northern Virginia.
So they are like replacing. They needed to replace a valve. Obviously, they didn't bother trying to bypass it. So. The first two times there was no announcement.
Listen to you talking understand
how
works happens.
I'll tell you how I got this. I picked it up just yesterday from my fellow knight, Steve Genovese, who is a long-time retired. He worked for
the lodge have water?
I worked for the gas company, he says. And it goes, I tell you every time.
Get someone from DWP down here.
Because they always did things their own way. They never told anybody. And so that's how I was able to throw down the lingo, by the way. And anyway, so finally they just said, oh, it's going to happen from 8 to 5. And so there was no water. But that's okay. Nobody was home. Anyway, I went into the office, but of course everybody was here. And the first time it happened, there was no announcement, and it was on a morning. So all of a sudden people just started walking out of their houses. Like... First of all, thinking, number one, is this just it? Me? And then secondly, is this it? It's happening.
Now. Why isn't there any news?
This is like the right? The first 15 minutes.
You're going to have to go to a Morden Joe and beg him to release the water for you guys.
That's right. So that was that. And other than that, I did want to talk about a little bit of a sensitive subject here, but I I'm going to bring it up anyway. Everybody is talking about masks. Everyone's talking about masks. Yeah. And I have very strong feelings, as you know, about masks. I wear the mask. I obey the law, as you know, and we're doing fine here in Arlington. But I don't like wearing the mask for two reasons. One, I tend to hyperventilate. And when I talk,
you don't get enough oxygen mask goes in my mouth when you're wearing the mask. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Not getting enough oxygen. And I need to talk, number one. Number two, more importantly, on two different occasions now, wearing the mask, I have walked into a supermarket and I walked into a McDonald's. And both times, the person behind the register sees me, smiles through their mask and says, "Hey, good to see you again. Welcome back. It's been a while. I've never met these people before." So are they just confusing me with somebody because of the mask?
Are you being microaggressed? Have you been...
Are they something? What, JVL? Something
inscrutable.
Mysterious.
Regal. There's something regal.
There's a mystery.
Something regal about my eyes, and it could, because all they see are my eyes. And but I just nod and
now,
go.
Now, to be fair,
hi,
they probably just say that because you're coming to a fast food establishment, and that's what they say to everyone. It's good to see you again.
No, I don't know. She didn't say it. I saw that lady didn't say it to other people. I was waiting for my order. And and then the other time at the supermarket, and says, "Oh, I know you from before." I'm like, "Really? Because I don't know you." And maybe if I took off,
did
my
you
mask,
you said
did
you, that?
No, I didn't. Say
did you take
that.
Off?
I know
that
I
is not did you take off that your is face not
mask?
In character.
Did you take off his face mask.
You pretended to know them too.
You took off your face
like,
mask,
yeah,
and you said, "Do
mask.
I look like
hey,
the person you know?"
Buddy.
And you ripped off their what? Face mask and you spit right in their mouth, like bah, bah.
That's right. I did a little mouth to mouth on the dude. Okay, so that was. I just wanted to get that off my chest. I don't like where this is going. Being mistaken for
you got to start. Know, you got to start videotaping all these people, and the next time you get microaggressed, you put it on the internet and you say this person doesn't know me, and they said they know me, right? JBL, isn't that what we?
Yeah,
isn't that
yeah,
what we
I'm
do with the people?
When I go to Central Park,
you know, I had a funny mask thing happen to me a couple weeks ago. I was taking a friend who needed to be driven around a little bit and needed to go do some stuff at a bank. And so we had to go into a bank. And it was this funny moment. It was we were sitting in my car about to get out and we pulled our masks on before going into a bank. And I thought, this is every Western
right,
ever
right,
made.
Right, right.
This is what the black hats do right before they go in to rob the place.
Yeah. Exactly. It would have even felt more so if they were like black masks, you know. That would
yeah,
have really
bandanas. Cool. If I had thought ahead of time, uh-huh. instead of wearing my normal like Superman mask, yeah. I would have brought like a red cloth
and a cowboy
bandana
hat.
Or something.
Well, I would have had one of those
and a cowboy hat.
I think
right.
what I would have done is I would have gone into the bank and then put the black ski mask on and then take. You know, one of these little
jump
like
up
whack
on the counter.
Cop and then put like a.
We're
know,
here for the bank's
yep,
money,
jump
not
up on
yours.
The not your money. Thank you.
We don't want you to do anything with your hands, obviously.
No. If you're sick, if you're pregnant, lean against the wall. Okay.
Hey, Sonny, do you like the way I sidestepped that?
No, I don't know what
you
you're
tried to lay a trap for me,
about.
And
I
didn't take the bait.
I will say, I was baiting JVL, who had mentioned in his newsletter that he was surprised by the amount of like backlash he got from people when he said that we shouldn't destroy people's lives when they have one bad outburst on video. And I have to say, JBL, I found it really refreshing and kind of darling and quaint that you were surprised that people were
no, I was surprised that my readers were there, because I have a pretty good sense of who my readers
are
and
yeah.
what they think.
JVL, all people are bad. That's
well. This is why I control access to my secret podcast. Yeah, no, I'm sure I'd like him too. I'm sure he's actually a prince of a man, and we'd be best friends. That's why
you personally
I was defending
him.
Because I personally like him and am certain that he and I are basically simpatico on everything. All right. So what have we got, boys?
Other than that, I was going to say, you know what? I've been watching
the Criterion Channel
movies. Catching with no. Let me get back to that in a second because I would like to see that. Just with my son, family. We saw yesterday. The great We Were Soldiers movie.
Ooh, the Mel Gibson?
Yeah, I guess you can't talk about him anymore, but he's in it, and he's great, and it's very sort of very Catholic, as you know. A couple thoughts on We Were Soldiers.
Once and Young.
And Young was the book. Now, the funny thing is, Barry Pepper is in it, and he plays Joe Gallo.
Yeah.
And the
Private, what's his name? In
oh, well, he plays himself, in, Gallo. In, oh, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. In no, Saving no, Private
in
Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan. Ryan. What's his name?
Oh, oh God. He's so now. I know. The Sniper.
Right. I'll fantastic. Effort that while
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I, many, many, many years later, Joe Galloway, I met Joe Galloway. Because we were both at Stanford at the same time doing a Hoover thing.
He was on the junket circuit too?
He was with me on my first one back in 2005. And I said, oh, hey, I'm Vic Manis. I'm at the Weekly Standard. Who are you? Joe Gallo. Oh, what do you do, Joe? I had no idea. I didn't read the book at the time. JVL, his name?
Private Jackson.
Jackson. That's right, Jackson.
And I always get stuck on Mellish.
Yeah, Mellish.
Private
yeah,
Mellish.
Yeah, that's right. And anyway, so I knew Joe. He was a very nice guy. And you know how you could tell these nice guys? Because you watch the movie and you think to yourself, my God, this guy did all of that and was in the middle of it. And I drang. And of course, that's not, he doesn't tell me once. And we spent a whole week together. Like he's on in one office, I'm in the other. And never brings it up. You know,
because you're colleagues.
It was me.
Because you're the same.
Because we're the same.
He and, just knew that you guys were equals, and he didn't need
thought,
to talk
I,
about
I,
that.
I thought,
I said,
he
hey, Joe, keep
you.
It down. What are you doing? You're really noisy.
He thought he recognized you.
Again, I'm being microaggressed left and right here. Jeez.
Served with
With well, there was, with, I was, like, there was a few in the movie. Okay, another thought. Madeline Stowe. Love Madeline Stowe. She's great. And who am I? Wasn't
what
it
do you
Matt
love
Labash?
About her?
Matt Labash, I think. She's just all woman. She's all woman, which I know isn't really my type, but I know you're going to say that. I'm just jumping the gun here.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of
great.
Dana Delaney.
She's just great. No, no, yeah. No. Yeah. Madeline Stowe is so good. And she's like, oh, she's like the sort of the hot wife and mom. Just, and just
we could,
all
we
around.
Could, we could do a whole episode on that
the whole
line.
Package.
Right there.
On I sorry. Let's just keep on moving around. But you know what the funny thing is? Chris Klein, he was supposed to be the yeah. He was like
from American Pie.
Yeah, and Mel Gibson and he was in Election, I think. And he, you know, he is sort of with Mel Gibson. He treats him like his son and the whole thing. And whatever happened, not to him in the movie. I know it happened to him in the movie, but what you know, he was supposed
well,
to be
Chris
next.
Pine happened, and then people
oh.
started confusing the two
oh,
of
no.
them, and they
happened?
Somebody said, "I want to hire Chris Klein," and they thought it meant Chris Pine.
That's a great
and,
question, though. I don't know. Wait,
Well, all of those
well,
American
no.
Pie people disappeared.
Well,
every last
Jason,
one of them. Jason Biggs went
Jason,
away.
Well,
Jason
he
Biggs
was in
Orange
is
the
New Black,
and
he had
Tara
Reid for a while. Tara Reid had the Sharknado things, but she was like a famous burnout. She's like the most famous burnout out of that set. What's his name? Stifler.
But who's the older, you know, older
Mina
girl?
Suvari.
Stifler.
Mina Suvari.
Stifler had
she disappeared. Stifler. Sean William Scott.
Career
right.
Of
he
those guys. I would say because he was in. Remember, he was in The Rundown with The Rock. He was in Southland Tales.
Yeah, but after that, he went to
well,
movie
I think,
jail.
I think
he
had a drug
problem.
He went
to movie jail.
Like he famously had a
who
pretty
could
bad
say?
Drug problem. If I remember correctly, but he has like worked, you know, he was in the Kevin Smith movie Goon, for instance, with Liev Schreiber, yeah. I believe.
The funny thing is, the breakout star in We Were Soldiers, or not the breakout star, but the one who became most famous, I think, of that of the other, you know, the co-star, not counting Sam Elliott, who by the way is amazing. As
Jim
Sergeant
Caviezel?
Major Plumlee? No. John Hamm. John Hamm is
oh,
in
Oh, John
Weaver
Hamm
Soldiers.
Is in that.
It's
jeez.
Funny. Yeah. Very small role, but he's in there. He's in the fight. You know, he has a few lines.
You mean sucker punches
no,
John
you
mean, Hamm.
You see him. He's.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you. All right.
Boom.
Well, before we go to the main part, and I want to talk about, I have a lot of thoughts on the main part, just a quick word from one of our sponsors. We're all looking for ways to save money, especially now. When's the last time you looked at how much you're spending every month on car insurance, on homeowners insurance? Now's the time to check out Gabby and see about getting a lower rate for the exact same coverage you already have. Gabby takes the pain out of shopping for insurance by giving you an apples-to-apples comparison of your current coverage with 40 of the top insurance providers like Progressive, Nationwide, and Travelers. Just like your current insurance account, just Man, I should stop with the Coke here. Just link your current insurance account, and in about 2 minutes, you'll be able to see quotes for the exact same coverage you currently have. Gabby customers save $825 per year on average. If they can't find you savings, they'll let you know so you can relax knowing you have the best rate out there, and they'll never sell your info, so no annoying spam or robocalls. It's totally free to check your rate, and there's no obligation. Take 2 minutes right now to see how much you could save on your car and homeowners insurance. Go to Gabby.com/subbeacon. That's GABI.com/subbeacon. Gabby.com/subbeacon. Okay. Who's,
very
I think it was JBL's idea.
My idea. Totally. This is on me. If this doesn't work, if this is a flaming disaster, you guys can blame it on me.
I have a couple questions, JVL.
And then we'll do that Alexandria Daddario movie next week.
Like September, I don't think. So.
It came out already in JVL's mind, so to speak.
Out.
Out.
Sounds weird if you don't say out.
Yes, out. Did you want to... Okay, so we're talking about Hamilton. That's what we're talking... Everyone's talking about it. It's all the excitement. It's rather an interesting time for this kind of a movie slash musical to come out in the current zeitgeist, if you will. But the question, JVL, is did you always say, were you the one thinking, I want to do this? Or was your lovely wife the one who said, let's watch it? You watched it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is great. I want to see it. We should talk about it.
So I did not even realize that this was a thing Disney Plus was doing. And like most of America, I found out somehow. I think my wife heard somewhere or something on Twitter said, oh, Hamilton's on Disney Plus starting this weekend. And so we watched it with the kids. And after watching it, I thought we have to do a show on this.
After you had seen it then. Okay. So it wasn't like beforehand you were thinking about it. No. Because you're not a musical guy, although you have performed in musicals.
I have been in musicals. I've spent a good deal of my life in musical theater. I hate it, though. I don't like musicals. I don't like musical theater.
So I don't. Why? Then why?
Why which? Why?
Oh, why would you perform or be in perform in?
Well, I didn't. You know, I was curious. I was young. I didn't. I didn't quite know yet that I hated it. I'd say I hated my hatred was a learned hatred, not an instinctual hatred. Does that make sense?
Yes. You just didn't like the. Well, okay. All right.
I didn't like the taste of it. It left a bad taste in my mouth.
Of course. Well, depends on the show. And Sonny, I know you are not at all.
Trivia question, JVL trivia. This is if you really loved me, Vic, you would know which two shows I starred in.
Wizard of Oz, and you were the Scarecrow.
Well, that doesn't really count because that was like sixth grade. Right. But in high school, two high school shows.
Oh, no.
You're right about Wizard of Oz and Scarecrow, but my two high school shows.
No, I don't know that one. The one that always stuck in my mind was Wizard of Oz.
In high school, I starred in Hello, Dolly.
I did not know this is the first time I'm hearing
Vandergelder.
This.
And then Carnival.
Oh,
which
yeah.
everybody confuses with Carousel.
Yes.
Because Carousel is the famous one.
I've seen Carousel.
Carousel is the famous one.
With all the
Carnival
hits
is the janky, stupid one. And I don't even remember the name of
Were you a Carney?
Character. I was a puppeteer. I was a tortured puppeteer who was in love with the ingenue in the show.
Sometimes this is what you have to do. You have to go through this in order to make it to the big time, right? They've all done this, you know. They go through these, you know, some of these various insane sort of productions, things they don't want, but it's work. It's work until they make it into the big time, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is just high school theater that I was doing. I honestly should have spent my time playing basketball. I can't believe I like left basketball to do musical theater because that's how the musical theater for us was essentially the winter sports. It was the winter sports season. And so I did a spring sport, I did a fall sport, and I had done a winter sport. And then I was like, hey, I don't know, maybe I'll try being in a show.
What was your fall sport? What was your spring sport?
Cross country. It was spring track and tennis. I sort of swapped them back and forth. Mm-hmm. I did tennis freshman and senior year and spring track sophomore and junior year.
I told you, Kate loved doing theater. in mm-hmm. high school. And no. she was was in a couple of productions with Gretchen oh. Mol, the actress Gretchen Mol. Mm-hmm. They did Mulholland Drive. They did
Kate didn't catch Harvey's eye.
I can say that because she has no idea what I'm talking about. She has no idea what
I said. Kate didn't catch Harvey's
eye. Funny?
But
she's told some weird stories about, like, you know, guys will come up, here's my card, and, you know, I have a talent agency, you should come into the city.
It's
and
funny.
I'm like,
I had the same experiences.
Same guy.
Different guys.
Except for you said
different
yes.
Different guys.
Except for you said yes. I said, well, you know, next to get it, you're surrounded in the basement with the wood side of the plywood on the wall. That was you. I knew it. Okay, so back to
Hamilton. It's like you work out a lot. Are you proud of your body?
back to Hamilton. Hamilton. Okay, so Sonny.
I did.
You
I
saw it.
It.
Yes, you said you were going to see it with your wife. Okay, so we all saw it. That's great.
Did anybody else see it?
No.
Did Dr. Mattis see it?
You know, I told them to see it, but I don't know. We've seen as a fan. Well, really, my mother and would take us as kids into the city to see
TKTS.
TKTS right there on Times Square. So you don't know what you're seeing until you get there. You don't know what you're seeing until you get
there. Exactly. That's how middle class. I'm surprised that the doctor's family had to do TKTS.
Well, my aunt, you know, she lives in the city, and she, you know, she's very city-wise. She's like, don't spend that.
Nobody in New York pays full price for Broadway tickets.
And that's how I ended up in nosebleed seats seeing Starlight Express. You know what I mean? the roller skates. It was like a roller disco.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Me and my girl. Okay, there was one with Sandy Duncan. Anyway, let's not go there. How about a big
Hamilton?
One? Somebody,
Hamilton. It's the story of Alexander Hamilton. The framing device of which is Aaron Burr.
The A L E X.
Aaron Burr, who's played by Leslie Odom Jr. here, who is kind of telling this story. Through his lens, which is that he keeps just missing out on all of these opportunities to really influence the shape of the country and the nation. And he loses them out to this Alexander Hamilton character, who is, as we learn from this production, he's an orphan son of a bastard, I guess. I don't know. He's an immigrant. We know that he's an immigrant. He comes to the United States and he makes his way through school and through the revolution, and he marries rich. He marries a Schuyler sister. He's one of the founders. He's an important one. He's very much, very, very involved with the Federalist Papers, and he's writing all these papers, and he just writes and writes. He's basically the original blogger. That was one of my big takeaways from this movie, is that he has to get the words out of him. He needs everyone to know what he thinks about everything. He's a blogger through and through. And that obviously endeared him to me. I was like, yes, I recognize this. I recognize this. It's an interesting movie. You know, you've got characters playing. You've got people playing multiple characters. For instance, David Diggs plays Marquise de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson. Probably my favorite dual performance in the role in the movie. He's really over the top with it, and I like it. I like it a lot. You have I cannot pronounce this guy's name, so please do not ask me to, but the same guy plays Hercules Mulligan and James Madison. He's fantastic. Yes. He's fantastic in this. There's a lot of energy to the production. Now, I had some questions about the choices made in this movie, and I'm hoping you guys can walk me through them. For some reason, everybody is singing the whole time, and it's not explained in the movie. Did a witch put a curse on everyone? They could only speak in verse. Why was everyone singing in this movie? Did they have a brain injury? Was it? I don't understand.
You know, it's funny you say this, because one of my favorite shows of the late 90s was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And they did a musical episode.
Which
and the way
loved.
It was rationalized is that a demon, because Buffy was a show about demon, a demon comes up from whatever demon dimension is, and he actually puts a curse on all the people so that they can only sing, they can't speak.
This movie is really missing a scene like that to explain exactly what is happening on the screen, because it's very confusing. You expect something like The Patriot.
Vic, are you losing Sonny here?
Yeah, I feel like I'm losing Sonny a little bit.
Yeah, still here. I'm losing you totally, Sonny.
Am I still here?
It's just me. You're a little glitchy. You're a little glitchy.
You're super. Your network is dying.
Hold on. Let's give it one sec here. Oof. I'm still recording, so I'm just going to keep going.
Okay.
Second question that I had. Maybe you guys, again, can help me out on this. Disney paid $75 million for this production of the life of Alexander Hamilton. But it was shot entirely in one room, as best as I could tell. It was all in one area, and they just kept having people come out, and they were pretending it was something else. Again, I didn't quite understand. They spent so much money on this, and yet it's all just being shot in this one room where there are minimal costume changes. I don't understand the movie. What is happening in the movie? Why am I watching these people in the same space over and over again?
Did you hear the canned laughter too?
I appreciate it was.
What sort of choice was that by Disney?
To the sitcoms of the 70s and 80s and 90s. I like that actually. I like that. That was a good choice. When the guy from Mindhunter showed up as King George, I was like, I get this. This is because he's the wicked King George. They're trying to show how malevolent he is. Everything else, it was a little bit strange to me. I didn't quite understand. I couldn't quite figure it out. So anyway, that's my big takeaway from Hamilton.
As Sonny Butch would say, SMDH.
No, I hate musicals, and I found this tolerable, which means it's probably one of the greatest musicals of all time. I wrote a whole piece about this for the Free Beacon once, that like as a birthday present, my lovely wife bought tickets to see the Book of Mormon, and I went to see the Book of Mormon, and I figured, you know, it's a musical by the South Park guys. They're very funny. I like everything they do. I'm sure this will be a lot of fun. And I went and I sat there stone faced the whole time through it. It did nothing for me. And this was much
So even when people are laughing,
no, it does nothing for me. I will say again, I didn't hate this. I didn't come out of it angry that I had watched it. Some of the numbers are pretty amusing. And I will say that the one where the one Skylar sister sings about how she has missed out on her chance with Alexander Hamilton. I thought that was very well done and very well performed and very well staged. I was like, okay, this is pretty good. But I couldn't imagine like putting this on in my car and listening to it all the time, this Schoolhouse Raps version of American history.
At this very moment, John Podhoretz is smashing his iPhone.
No, but it doesn't, shattered
into a million pieces.
It just doesn't. It's not my thing at all. It's not my thing at all. And this is why I argued against doing the episode, and I'm glad we did it because again, it's fine. I don't have any problems with this particular production, but it does kind of reinforce the fact that the signature musical theater achievement of the last 20 years left me totally cold. Mm. Yes.
I have a question for you, Sonny. Do you think this would have worked as a Les Mis style movie production rather than a taped theatrical version?
You mean like the Russell Crowe Anne Hathaway?
Maybe.
Yes.
I don't know.
Movie.
Maybe, but I didn't particularly. I have not liked any of the like filmed productions of Les Mis either. So, and I like,
because the reason I ask is because I come out of this thinking that this, what they have done here, should bury the idea of ever doing one of those style musical productions ever again.
It depends on what you are trying to get out of it. So my understanding is that Disney paid $75 million for this as a backdoor to get the movie rights, more or less. That they have acquired not only this filmed theatrical production of it, but also that they now own the rights to remake it as a movie. And frankly, I think that that's better, because I do think that, like, that is how people expect to watch movies. I think people watch a filmed play, and no matter how good it is, they're still like, I'm watching a film play.
This was going to be released pre-COVID. And had this been released theatrically, it would have made all of the money that there is in the world. Yes. Did you see did you see the numbers on it for streaming?
Did Disney release numbers on it for
streaming? Disney did not, but there are some backdoor ways of getting into this, which is they looked at the number of downloads of the Disney Plus app. And they did 460,000 downloads over the three-day weekend, which is 75% more than a normal weekend for them. And they strategically, in mid-June, killed their seven-day free trial very quietly, so that anybody who was logging in to get Hamilton was going to be an actual paying customer. So I think that's pretty good. I mean, adding, and that's just in the US. So they added another 350,000 subscribers worldwide. I think that makes it a pretty big win for them. And I get the sense that this is something that a lot of people watched and like. This isn't like Bird Box or something where people see the first 3 minutes and then walk away. This is every time I log into the Disney Plus app, what I am shocked by is the number of things that I say to myself, yes, I would like to actually sit down and watch that. And there aren't 500 of them. Mm. There's like 25 of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that is true on Netflix. On Netflix, there are 500 things that if I was super bored and it's like sitting on an airplane, I might watch one of.
I don't think it's true of Netflix. I do actually think it's true of HBO Max. So I like, because I'm an HBO subscriber, I found out the HBO Max rollout has been so terrible on every level. Literally, I mean,
the worst thing ever.
It's to the point where, just for starters, if you're a Roku user, you can't actually get the app. Like it does, and that's like 80% of the streaming market apparently is Roku. Anyway, but like I have an Apple TV, so I was able to actually download it and watch it. And HBO Max just has tons of stuff that I actually want to watch, like tons of Warner Brother movies, the TCM channel, the Adult Swim channel. Cartoons. Those are cartoons, not, you know, after
Vic was very excited for a moment.
Just the HBO stuff and everything else. I mean, I like every time I turn on HBO Max, there's like something I want to watch. The other day I just put in Clint Eastwood because I had wanted to watch a Clint Eastwood movie, and it had like 20 Clint Eastwood movies. I was like, okay, this is actually a useful service to me in a way that like Netflix kind of isn't. That Amazon is, but it, like a lot of that stuff would have cost extra, you know. I think that Disney Plus and HBO Max are the two best services, and it's a shame that Warner Brothers has and AT&T have done such a terrible, terrible job with the rollout of HBO Max because it is actually a pretty solid service.
Victorino, yes. What did you think? Did you love it?
I gave it an A. I really liked it. Okay, duration so is hard, but you know, that's what they have the intermission for. It
Come
was 2
on.
Hours and 40 minutes, and I looked, I go, that can't possibly be 2 hours and 40 minutes. But of course, when you're in a theater, you also...
You've paid $900 for your
seat.
That's
exactly right. See, I paid that amount of money for it, so I want it to be long, right? And I mean, that was part of it. It was weird. I mean, the whole family watched it. We turned off the lights in the basement because it's close to where the Wi-Fi is. It was better Wi-Fi in the basement than in the other room because there's a brick wall separating the TV. But in any event, so it actually kind of felt like you were watching it. Like, you know, if it's dark enough that you can almost feel like you're in the theater. And I loved... I'm going to get carried away here, but talking about...
Get carried away. Give over to your feelings.
I love going to certain... theater, you know, watching shows on Broadway or and even off Broadway for that matter, it's just a whole experience, you know? I mean, and Sonny talks about, you know, obviously it's all being done on a stage, but when you're there, it's really something, and it's amazing. And I used to, this is very weird, I'm just going to go off, digress here a little bit. When I was a kid, you know, you'd go and see any sort of musical, and it's dark except for the stage. And every now and then, you know, I'd look around, and you just look at the audience, and then you'd look out, and then you'd think that outside these walls is a whole other thing going on.
People, people are getting stabbed.
And of course, it's City of Daylight, because we never
druggies,
saw...
Druggies, junkies never, are passing out and dying on the street.
Yeah, that stuff too. That stuff
Joe
too.
Joe Chill
but,
is
you know,
hanging
I always,
out in the alley.
In my mind, it's always fun. It's always fonder memories I have of New York. But, you know, and it was always brought... the idea was that it was, you know, it was crazy thinking. It was like brought, you know, like in broad daylight out there. Because, of course...
Matinee.
You would never see a movie at a show at night. That'd be insane for the price. You always have to see matinee. And most of the time... For whatever reason, you kept on getting like the understudies. That was the worst, you know, because you'd be
always.
Like, always, right? Why am I always getting the understudies? But in any event, I liked the experience in general, and watching Hamilton kind of reminded me of what that was like. And so, I mean, I thought it was great. It did really well on my quadrants. I think you got duels, you know, you got the ladies, you got that. Oh, the blackmail with the or the extortion, you know, the Reynolds letter. I mean, that stuff is great. And you learn a lot. And I didn't know Alexander Hamilton became Secretary of the Treasury, you know, and. I'll tell you what I really the seed stealer for me was King George. I always looked forward to. So they have different styles.
Did you tell your daughter who he was?
Oh yeah, I because I looked it up later that he was the voice of Kristoff.
That's Kristoff. Was her mind blown?
Funny, yeah. She's like, oh, that's crazy. But of course, she's not.
It's much funnier if you only know him from Mindhunter. Trust me.
Okay, I'll check that out. He's really good at this. And the other thing is, it is an homage to the Beatles. And Lin-Manuel Miranda said he was thinking about this, and even though it made no sense to bring King George into it, because he never met Hamilton, but as sort of a counterpoint, number one. And number two, in terms of musical style, because you have rap, you have R&B, and you have hip-hop, and he thought, you know, British invasion music. And so as a result, it's a very Beatles-esque, Paul McCartney-esque kind of tune. There are little Beatles moments in it that you'll pick up on the song. And it's just fantastic. And the lyrics are great. And you kind of find them sympathetic. You know, you're going to miss me. It's so much harder to lead. Trust me. Now what do you do? All these different things. Fantastic.
Best character.
So I really
best character is definitely
it,
Jefferson.
I liked it across the board. Oh, that's the interesting thing. He really does not come off as a great guy in Hamilton. And in some ways, you're like, oh, I kind of like Burr a little bit more than Jefferson. It's funny. But yeah, I love Jefferson. And,
this revisionist history is no good. I don't appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's like the Jefferson-Madison thing. But it was and of course, but Hamilton and George Washington come out very much. You know, very have are favorable portraits of them.
The yeah, very controversial thing, take on George Washington.
Very controversial
in this show.
Take now. It's funny, they keep on picking different portrayals of Washington I've seen are all these giant, you know, hulking figures. You have this fella. You said
that's because Washington was huge
yes,
for his time.
Exactly. And yeah, like no, in the to. John Adams series.
It's like a thing of him.
Do you remember who played him in the John Adams series?
Hack. David Morse.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying
great
to remember.
What?
Searing
yes,
Hands?
Very good. Very
oh, David
good
Morse. Yes.
David Morse, who was a big that's guy. Right. Yeah. In any event, that was that's my thought, JVL. I really enjoyed it. I've seen a lot of musicals, so I was a little bit skeptical. And I was a little bit, you know, I don't know. It's always like, you know.
Well, it's oversold, right? You think to yourself, oh, come on.
That's right.
Like, everybody only loves this because it's like the Black Hamilton musical and it's all virtual signaling. And like, Obama loved it, which
right.
is why
everybody
we love it, right?
Loved, right. It started off
it
early
can't
on.
Possibly
it was a little bit,
be this good.
Right. And early on, you heard, well, it was interesting. Do you remember a long time ago when it first came out, it was like whispers on the right. You know what? This is actually really good. Have you seen Hamilton? It's really good. And, you know, I mean, he read the Ron Chernow book, you know, and then Chernow worked with him on this, you know, on the production. So, I mean, it was going to be good and obviously very sympathetic to Hamilton and very touching. But then everybody jumped on that bandwagon. You're exactly right, JVL. And so you're like, really? Wow.
The first review I read of it was actually a National Review, and I forget whether it was Terry Teachout or Kyle Smith who reviewed it, but whoever it was, they loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was always my hedge of right. Like, okay, so it's not just political. I loved the crap out of it.
Go for it, JVL.
I don't know about you guys. I have not seen like every musical. I've seen a bunch. I don't like them typically.
You're a self-hating musical guy.
Of course I am. Easily my favorite musical ever. And I would say, so I've not purposely not talked with John about this because I'm hoping to have a long exchange with him. But I think the first act might be the best first act of any musical in the history of Broadway. The first act is just amazing. And I love everything about it. So Sonny, I, like you, hate the contrivance of the idea of a musical. I hate it. And I felt as though Hamilton really goes as far as it is possible to go to sort of put the contrivance behind you. Partly because there are the lack of sets, because we have really a lack of even scene markers. What you're getting is much more like an impressionistic oral history that's being sung. And the fact that they don't break into song, because the whole thing is sung, much more like opera, takes away the jarringness of why are these people having a normal conversation and now they're singing. And the other part about it that feels organic is that Lin-Manuel Miranda's love for the character is palpable in just about every beat. And it, you know, having the auteur playing the lead role in a live production makes a difference.
Wow.
Like you can really feel that and it adds verisimilitude to it.
Lin-Manuel Miranda's performance is the weakest aspect of the thing by an enormous margin. I mean,
he is not as good a performer as the rest of them.
As David Diggs, he's not as good as the guy who plays Aaron Burr. He's not as good as any of these, like anybody else that's on the stage. And it, like, that actually, I think, is a big negative. I mean,
I agree that he just isn't as talented a performer as they are. But all of the passion and the understanding of it comes out and makes him just fantastic. But there are a bunch of choices in it that I really, really liked narratively. And the biggest one is the idea of, like, what do you do with Hamilton qua Hamilton? Because he is, you know, like, he isn't actually the star. You know, like, if the story is the story of the American Revolution, everybody has their favorite founding father, and we're going to do a ranking on founding fathers later. And Hamilton is always like the smart kid's choice, but he's very much a supporting player in the founding. And so if you're doing a show about him, like, do you exaggerate his role to make him the star? And Lin-Manuel Miranda just decides not to do that. And so he situates Hamilton as the guy who's going through his own dramas in the midst of a bunch of much bigger stories. And so, you know, you have Jefferson and Washington who each come on stage as if this is their show, right? You know, as if this is just a scene in the show about them, because they are much, much bigger figures. And Hamilton is, truth be told, a supporting player compared to them. And then even King George himself is a bigger figure than all these people. And so you wind up with this, like, nesting doll structure with larger dramas subsuming the smaller dramas, but with the small drama of Hamilton being the center of the piece. And so, you know, the nesting doll would have Hamilton and then Jefferson and then Washington and then George. And the cherry on top of all of this is that the real fifth lead character is Burr, who is the guy who thinks that he should be the star of it when he himself is a nobody.
He actually is the star of the show. The whole thing is framed around his perspective. It's framed around his resentments of Alexander Hamilton. He is the narrator. He is the one who, I mean, he's literally
He's literally the narrator. This is the genius of the way the narrative structure is built here, is really, really something. And I just loved the crap out of it. I find it interesting, you know, just to sort of step back and like think about it meta in a way. All of the pushback that exists for Hamilton, so far as I can tell, actually came from the left.
There are two which is interesting of pushback, right? There's the pushback on the left that is like, this is like the neoliberal, you know, we're going to cover up the actual problems with capitalism and democracy by putting a coat of paint, so to speak, on it, right? By using actors
Correct.
Of color to tell the stories of these people, blah, blah, blah. And interestingly, you have a mirror, an almost a mirror version of that argument on the right, where like the biggest resentment of this production is that it's a bunch of African American and Puerto Rican actors playing the
except that the people on the left who are bothered by it tend to be academics, and the people on the right who are bothered by it tend to be Mike Cernovich,
whoever, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, one would assume.
Right, one assumes, right. Yeah. I mean, just actual racists. So I gonna say, I don't know about you guys, but I do not like stunt casting. I am bothered and annoyed by stunt casting, but in this specific case of Hamilton, I think it's incredibly effective to do something to the story, which is to universalize the ideas of the founding.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point.
And I find that to be an incredibly powerful and ultimately quite patriotic
I think there's
way to take it on. Like I just love the crap out of it
for that.
Anybody can make it.
Yeah, no,
here
I mean,
America,
I like
even if you're from St.
Again,
Lucia,
my Barbados, issues with the play is that it is a musical. That is, I mean, like that is what it comes down to for me. But yeah, I'm ambivalent as to the casting.
Yeah, and the talent. Yeah, so you guys, when you were goofing on me for like the story of what it's like to make it on Broadway. So the backstories of the two lead actresses in this, I think, are very instructive. So on the one hand, you have Philippa Sue, who plays Eliza Schuyler, and she is a Juilliard girl. Mm. And, you know, like the kids who come out of Juilliard, it's like they've been touched by God, right? You're given an all-access pass. And, you know, like the very first thing she did coming out of undergrad was get a lead, and, you know, she's super young in this. And then you had the girl who plays Angelica Schuyler. Her name's Renee Goldsberry.
She's very good.
Very good. My favorite. Again, my favorite herself. Performance in
and
the. In
she
the...
is astonishing. And she has been humping it out in show business for like 20 years. She started out doing backup singing for Vonda Shepard in the Ally McBeal series. She did a stint on soap operas. This, again, I think she steals totally. Like every scene she's in. She is so obviously a star. She has one of the great voices I've ever heard. You think this woman had to go this long in life without being like, you know, getting to work her way into a place where people could see exactly how good she is. And that's how weird and cruel all of like theater world is. And in a weird way, even more so than movies. Like in movies, you can, you know, if you really work hard, you can write your own parts. You can shoot small indie theater. Like there's just not as much owning a theater. Like to put on a production that can only be seen live by people is really, really hard. It's not like the theatrical version of making a mixtape where you shoot a small
Broadway play.
Right. Right. So, or, and get it seen by anybody. So,
well, you know, when it comes to, musicals, I have the same approach as, you know, with movies, which is I like most of them, but I will tell you the ones I do not like. And this probably is a disappointment to some people who are into musicals. Cats, just did not like Cats. at all.
Perfect.
I feel like that's, I think nobody likes cats, right? Nobody will admit to liking cats.
Clearly, people like cats because they keep on going to see cats.
Everybody goes to the Winter Garden Theater, or the Bare Naked Ladies. I don't even know.
Nickelback.
Cats is the Creed or the Nickelback of, you know, of musicals. Like, nobody will admit to liking it, but it sells out everything, right?
Yeah, but it sells out, okay? And then the other one was, you know, Phantom did not do it for me. And I think I had to see it once. I know Peter Lockyer, who's a friend of ours, a good friend of Kate's from high school, and he was the Phantom of the Opera for many years, and he was in Les Mis, West End, and Broadway, and he's great. And he was in Miss Saigon. He's a teacher for acting.
Vic, what are your favorite shows? You don't have to rank them if you don't want to, although I'd like it. Watching Hamilton
was great, but having on Broadway, you know, the classics are great. Guys and Dolls. And I saw Guys.
South Pacific?
No, I didn't see South Pacific. I saw Guys and Dolls with Jamie Farr from MASH. Yes. And he plays Nathan Detroit. And he was great. He played that role perfectly. Let's see. I saw The Producers. And also
Lebanese.
He played the Sheik in Cannonball Run. I saw The Producers, and again, that one was not with Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane. So, but you know what? It was still funny. It was still funny. I have a list somewhere here. I lost it of all the various musicals I've seen. But I saw Annie on Broadway, but I don't think I saw the production with Sarah Jessica Parker, because she was Annie once.
Boy, that must have been an awkward Annie after Sex in the City. You know.
I'll tell you what's crazy. I saw, it's too late now. There's no going back now. I saw The Boy from Oz, in which the Boy from Oz, in which Hugh Jackman plays Peter Allen, the writer and the composer and producer who married Liza Minnelli and died of AIDS. Peter Allen, you know, great music. And so
Hugh Jackman played him.
Yes, Hugh Jackman played him.
Careful.
A quick word before we get to our rankings. Did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? You know who I'm talking to. The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but probably never for this price. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month. Plus, for a limited time, you can get the first month for free. If you're ready to take action to prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/subbeacon to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/subbeacon. JVL, you had rankings.
I want to rank the founding fathers.
Oh, okay.
You go first. You go first.
Ugh.
How can I do this off the top of my head? You have to give us some sort of.
What am I to say? Yeah.
I don't know. Are you an American?
All right, go ahead. You go first.
Number one, George Washington. Here's the thing about Washington. People who know nothing about American history just say Washington's the best.
And it's the dumbest thing. That's not how this
and
works.
Then,
no, you should be doing it the other way around.
And then people who learn a little bit, and they're like, it's Madison, or it's Adams. But once you know everything about it, you go back to saying Washington's the best. Washington, right. Number one of all the founding fathers. No one denies this. Number two, Ben Franklin. Underappreciated. Number three, Alexander Hamilton. Number four, John Adams. Number five, James Madison. Number six, John Jay. Number seven, Thomas Jefferson. Last, the worst. Far and away the worst of all the founding fathers. I'm limiting it. Those are the key figures. I'm sorry, you think Hancock deserves to get on the list?
George Mason. Okay. If you know, if we had Jay Cost on the show, it would be number one, James Madison.
Jay,
number two,
Jay would not
James
come
Madison.
On the show.
Number three, James Madison. What?
Jay would not come on the show.
Oh, yeah, I know. Okay.
Jay does not like me very much.
I just wanted to throw that out there. George Washington had a terrible end of his life. Did you know that? How he died? Oof. It was all gastrointestinal. Okay. Did you... It was. It was awful. And it could have been treated, you know, like today, but...
Mm. Yeah, he died Mm-mm. He died a long time ago
they didn't know what
before
they
had real
then.
Medicine.
All sorts of enemas. Stuff that I try to do myself and it doesn't work. Homeopathic cures that don't work. I'm telling you.
All right, Vic.
The molasses enema. Okay. Oh no! I don't have any.
You don't have a ranking of shows.
No. I don't dispute. I won't dispute your ranking. I think that's fine. Although I did go. Look, I went to Monticello, and that
number three is.
Yeah.
You know the sun never caught Jefferson in bed. S-U-N, and he was a busy man, and he loved his wine.
My
and
favorite.
He gets extra points for that.
My favorite thing about Sunny, Thomas Jefferson is not that he founded the University of Virginia, the greatest of the schools, Mr. Jefferson's University.
No, it's
and
not
it's
that.
Not that he loved his wine and planted vineyards all throughout Virginia, of varying success and quality. It's that when he went broke, he had to sell all of his books. And then he loved books so much that he went broke again, buying them all back. That's like that. It's like a thing that you learn in the Monticello tour. Is that like at one point he needed to get books which were very expensive back in the, you know, 1700s. He sold them and to raise money, and then like he was like, no, I have to have all these books again, and he bought them all again. So anyway, number three is John Adams. Number two is Jefferson. Number one is Washington.
Let us not forget about John Adams. And people think that, oh, because Jefferson was wine and Adams was much more abstemious. That is not true at all. John Adams loved wine. In fact, he went on a trip like to Sonoma or Napa with his buddy before he got married, and they went to a bunch of wine tastings.
Oh, and he would not eat Merlot.
He said,
I won't drink
Merlot. And met some interesting ladies.
Listen, before we get out of here, I do have one serious question for each of you. What was your favorite number in the show?
It's the one with the Skylar sister singing about how she actually, I don't know the name of any of the songs, but the one where she's singing about how she wishes that she had been the one to you know, get married to Alexander Hamilton.
Gotcha.
I will say You'll Be Back and the subsequent numbers by King George III. I love the Beatles numbers.
Oh, the one it's white typical. Guy in the whole show. You thought
guilty as charged.
His stuff was best. Interesting. Just interesting.
Wait, you know, and you, JVL, you got it. What?
I really liked the History Has Its Eyes on You number, where Washington is talking to Hamilton as he is about to assume a command. I dug that a lot. All right.
Taking my shot. Corrections, shout outs. Nothing. We're good. Oh,
it's a long show.
You know, Robert Little, our friend Robert Little, sent me a bottle of Lambinog, which is a sort of fermented coconut liqueur. Not liqueur. It's a spirit, really. It's like the Filipino version of Everclear. And unfortunately, it's in my office. So, Robert, next time I go back in, I will bring it back with me. It's in my bar. But thank you very much. It's thoughtful. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
What do you got?
Did you guys read the Bloomberg piece about the Massachusetts weed head who stole the New York Giants Super Bowl rings?
Oh, no.
No.
It's amazing.
What happened?
So this guy owns a moving company, but on the weekends he's a thief, a cat burglar, and he's a big Pats fan. And when he watches the 16-0 season be destroyed in the Super Bowl by the David Tyree catch, he sits there while he's smoking weed with his 19-year-old girlfriend. It's like, fuck those guys. They don't deserve to have them rings. And he then goes to the place in Massachusetts where Super Bowl rings get made. And he breaks in and steals them all before they are distributed to the players. It is like Heat. If De Niro's character was played by Tommy from Quincy, it's amazing. You have to read it.
All right. I'm sure it's fine.